I'm Phil Reed from Steve Jackson Games, and you're listening to Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk.
This week, Morris, PJ, and Jessica discuss how to save an RPG session from disaster. In the news, NASA released a tabletop RPG adventure, the Arkham Horror RPG is coming at Gen Con, Chaosium offers over $10,000 in prizes in a design contest, and more, plus a brand new sketch about the realism of science in science fiction RPGs. This week on Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk.
Our sponsor this week is Chiselwicks, your friendly local poisoners guild. We have a wide range of lethal toxins and venoms from creatures as varied as snakes, spiders, serpents, atacops, basilisks, giant scorpions, wyverns, ettercaps, medusas, assassin bugs, green dragons, and even ghouls, ghasts, demons, and venomous mummies. All items sold for entertainment purposes only. Chiselwicks accepts no liability for any accidental murderings.
All the tabletop role-playing news. We aim to amuse and we aim to enthuse. And Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG talk. I am Russ, aka Morris, or Morris, aka Russ, and with me this week is...
PJ Coffey from the Southampton Guild of Roleplayers. Russ, as ever, I am delighted to be here. And here joining us, like a shining beacon of optimism in an ever-growing more pessimistic world, it's the one, it's the only, it's...
It's me, Jessica from EN Publishing. And thank you for implying that I'm a positive and radiant person. I don't generally see myself that way.
But in your current company, I think that's definitely how the role you're...
Everything is relative.
Oh, yeah, it's relative. Yeah. Before recording, we all established that we're all quite low energy and not living our best lives today. So, yeah, enjoy the podcast.
I like to add. Brains.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
All right, let's do it. Let's do some tabletop RPG news, and let's start with space.
Yeah, it's a fun piece of news. I like this.
Have you heard of a small organization called NASA?
Are they the ones that convince us through the conspiracy theory that the Earth is actually round instead of flat?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Awful, isn't it?
Something to do with administration. I don't
know. Yeah, they're the administration.
That's how they make money.
Yeah, got it. they administrate space. I think they're like a removals firm or, you know.
Okay.
I've got to say, I don't want to put them down, but they haven't looked at a lot of it. From what I hear, it's quite big.
Yeah.
And there's like quite a small percentage we've had a look at.
Yeah.
I don't want to put anyone down on their job, but...
Well, I went outside last night and I looked up at the sky and I looked at an awful lot of space, quite frankly. I just looked up and I just like went, all right, that's half of space looked at.
Mm.
This hemisphere's half of space. And if I went to Australia, I could then look at the other half of space and I'd then have looked at all of space.
Well, you could just wait till it's daytime and the Earth's rotated and then you just look up and you'll be able to see the rest of space.
I know, but you can't... You look up and down as well as left and right.
Of course, so
there's certain like we can here in the Northern Hemisphere can never see Alpha Centauri.
Yep. Wake up, sheeple! Australia's not real.
This is true. They're all paid actors, yes. including my family that live over there. Yes.
Yeah. Like
your family are paid actors.
Yeah.
Wow, that's dark.
Oh, not like you then.
Wow.
Sorry.
Are
you now saying Jessica doesn't exist?
Oh, there are days I feel like to be fair. There are days I question it, so it's fair of Peter. It's fair of Peter. Will. But anyway, should we get back to the actual news item that we're talking about?
Oh, so NASA, our Australian listeners.
That organisation which famously makes spaceships and launches them into space, amongst many other things.
And
but
space.
Yes, they do many other things, but one of the things they're most famous for is doing the whole chucking spaceships into that their space is a thing that they do.
And bringing them back, because that's the hard bit.
And sometimes they bring them back,
yeah. Sometimes. That's the tricky bit from what I know.
Yeah. Well, they've done something even harder now. Whoa. They've done something even harder than rocket science, even harder than launching a spaceship into space. Do you know what they've done?
What have they done?
They have made a tabletop RPG adventure. And we all know how hard that is.
That is very difficult
to
do.
Tricky. Writing it down is certainly tricky.
Especially as it's a system neutral fantasy RPG adventure. Yeah.
So it's called...
Which we have some raised eyebrows at, but nevertheless.
The Lost universe.
The Lost Universe, yes.
The Lost Universe. Yeah. It's a free download. Mm-hmm. It's 44 pages. And it's a, as Jester said, a system-neutral adventure. Although it does say it's for characters of, what was it, 6th to 7th level? Or what was it? It
said? 4 to 7. Levels 7 to 10.
Gotcha.
Characters. But I'm like, I mean...
That's quite a range.
That is, I imagine the
that's
people
28
that,
to 70 in total party levels.
That's a big range of challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, tell us more, Russ.
Yeah, I don't think that the character level is really relevant because there's no stats in the game at all whatsoever. So
I think there is a trap that there's something like 66 damage, but
right.
I did struggle a bit making my way through it.
Is that 66 Imperial or metric damage then?
Because
that's a big difference.
I think it might be using the Canadian system.
Oh, God. I don't even know how that works.
No.
No. No. All right. But it is system neutral in the... There is very, very little in terms of game mechanics in it. So it's an adventure which occasionally you'll just say, make a medium persuasion check and kind of leads you to determine what that is in your system.
A medium DC persuasion check, no less.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think basically it kind of assumes you're playing a D20 game of some kind, but I reckon it's kind of D&D Pathfinder, one of those.
I mean, I would probably give a go if it was something like Dungeon Crawl Classics or something like that, because I'm just the space stuff is pretty interesting.
Okay. Well, I haven't read it, so I'm gonna hand over to you, Peter, because I know you have.
Yeah, I'm intrigued because it does say it's designed to teach you real science. So the what says you, Peter?
Yeah, I was reading through it. I did struggle a little bit with the way it's formatted because that did make it quite hard for me to really.
Right, adventures is hard. All they can do is launch space rockets into space. That's easy.
I mean, like it's writing adventure. It's not rocket science, so.
I was going to make that joke if you didn't, so I'm glad someone did it before me.
You have totally ruined the sketch now.
Oh, wow.
That's literally the last line in the sketch.
Wow. I guess we're all going for the low-hanging fruit stuff.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, you know. it's nice. I guess I'm just sort of disappointed that NASA, people who are reputedly very good at maths, would not, take a bash at producing their own system.
Well... In fairness, I imagine this is... I imagine people that work at NASA, there are some nerds there. I'm going to come out and say
I
it.
I imagine
they've got like a work RPG club where they play games, and I imagine this is something they kind of made themselves in their free time, and they were like, hey, can we make this an official thing? And did things like that. So I imagine it's a bit of a passion project that's not people's main job. So, yeah.
It's just a little publicity thing.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fun.
It's very much someone's home campaign has got out into the wild. So it's not a new system. It is a relatively system-neutral adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is... I'm not even sure how I'd go about describing a system-neutral adventure, so maybe it's unfair of me to expect them to like have created something for me to be able to say, oh, absolutely, that's system-neutral. But yeah.
Sure,
I mean, it's quite different from other system-neutral adventures I've seen. They don't seem to be much in the way of... Adversaries in it. Sorry. Okay.
So is it more of like an exploration sort of adventure?
I mean, yes, but like when I talk about NASA and exploration, I feel that I'm cautious because that raises certain expectations.
Got it. So we're not rocketing through space, jettisoning around multiverses, striding the planes, if you will.
To be fair, I don't think NASA does that either.
I think they do. They just don't want to. They're not ready to tell us about it. I don't think the public is ready to deal with the multiverse.
I certainly found the little informational bits in the appendices about the Hubble Space Telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of sidebars in there about like dark energy and gravitational lensing and stuff like that, which is interesting. I like that. I like that about it.
Yeah. I mean, as we've established previously on this show, the collecting of RPGs and the reading of RPGs and the playing of RPGs are three separate but closely related hobbies. So this will tick a lot of boxes for a lot of people.
This is very true.
I think it's just really cool that this thing exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of, you know,
I'm glad natural content of it. Explicitly an endorsement of Hasbro by NASA. A lot of people have said it is basically Fifth Ed. And I would disagree. It's not.
It's definitely not Fifth.
Oh, is it not? Because I've heard that as well.
It could very much as easily be Pathfinder or Starfinder or anything else which has... Well, basically, the only mechanic in there is 66 damage at one point.
My understanding of Pathfinder is not, you know, like, exhaustive. But I would also be like, maybe?
It could even be first edition D&D, you know?
Yeah, maybe. First edition. Definitely part of the OSR school of thinking, That could work. And, like, yeah, in certain respects, it's sort of like it's got a certain weird fiction vibe to it. So, yeah, that's very old school. And
well, even just like a sort of system neutrally game like my own What Sword Is New, I think given the actual mechanics mentioned in it, 66 damage means something in What Sword Is New.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A medium DC persuasion check means something in What Sword Is New. It's a different DC because the scale is different, but it just says medium, so you just use the medium for that system.
Okay, I don't know What Sword Is World as well as you do, obviously. I know I'd struggle to run it in Savage Worlds. It wouldn't make a lot of sense to run it. For me, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to run it in Dread.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it doesn't feel like
position. I'd probably use the Awfully Cheerful engine for it. That would be simple.
Sure. So, maybe it is achieving system neutrality in that way. So, yeah.
It's approaching system neutrality.
You can approach
the speed of light, but you can never quite achieve it because it would require infinite energy.
Yeah.
But you can approach system neutrality, but maybe you can never quite achieve it because there will always be some kind of underlying assumption.
Hmm.
There we go. How about that?
That's intriguing.
Well, that's deep, Russ.
I know. How deep am I?
Anyway, I think it's really cool that NASA put an RPG thing. It's a nice freebie that you can download.
It's really cool.
I'm glad it's not an actual explicit endorsement of Hasbro. So,
Yes.
I think it's just a humanization of organizations such as NASA, which can seem quite, they're kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? These epic organizations, which everybody knows about. Monolithic, that's the word.
Monolithic,
yeah.
Faceless.
It
brings a humanising touch to...
That's what I was trying to say,
I've always been quite fond of NASA. I quite like their work, so...
I love their work. Space exploration, I love it.
Who else's work I love?
Who else?
Taylor Swift's.
Yes, but also...
The people who make Barbie.
Mattel.
The film I meant, rather than the...
I do like the director. But anyway, no, I'm getting away.
Yes.
Another thing is GMs, Game Masters.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I wish that in 2002 someone had thought to create a day to say thank you to your Game Masters. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Doesn't seem likely, though.
So what I'm saying is Monday the 4th of March was International GMs Day. I think somebody on the EM World Forums back in 2002, back in the day,
created it. Yeah.
I can't remember the forum member's name now because it's not written in front of me, but it became a thing and it's still a thing now. And it's just a day to say thank you to the person that runs games for you, because running games is a lot of work and it can be quite thankless and people put a lot of time and energy into it. So I think it's nice to just have a day to say, thanks for doing all this.
Mm.
I appreciate it. So, yeah, and also I think now there's lots of companies that do, promotions or bits and pieces for it as well.
Sales and all sorts of things. Yeah. It's turned into a proper industry event now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
which is kind of cool.
But yeah.
There's so many things that started on EN World.
Shame we don't monetize these things in some way, but okay.
Yeah, anyway, we didn't monetize any of these things.
But yeah, so I just think that was quite cool. And if you missed it, take the chance this weekend to say thanks to the person that runs games for you. And if you are someone that runs games and no one said thank you to you, passive-aggressively leave this article or play this podcast in front of your players, I guess.
Yes.
In sincerity, I do think GMs do need more players. Thanks and things, from the tables they play for, but also for the industry because, it doesn't work without them. And also any indie publishers will tell you the main people that buy their stuff are game masters that are buying new systems, advocating for them, running them for their tables, spreading the word of new systems and stuff. So, I'm really appreciative.
That day is also coincidentally three other anniversaries.
Oh, yes. It's also the anniversary of the death of Gary Gygax.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's the anniversary of the release of the first ever Dragonlance Adventure.
Oh.
Dragons of Despair, which was, in fact, 40 years ago. Wow. Exactly this time round.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, it's the anniversary of Peter's birth.
Yes.
Also, I don't know whether that's coincidental or not. I'm assuming it was.
Well, who knows? Sometimes you've got a thing going and you've got to roll with it.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's why. But yeah, so if you missed it, just a fun little story item. I just think it's nice, so thank you. Mm. But yeah. And that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, do you know that you can win thousands of dollars?
In general, yes.
From Chaosium, the publisher of Call of Cthulhu, by entering their basic role-playing design challenge.
So they've
got over $10,000 in cash prizes.
Nice.
We're not talking store credit, we're not talking product, we're not talking things worth up to $10,000, we're talking actual cash.
United States dollars.
Well, I assume it is. Yep.
It is.
Okay. And basically what you need to do is pitch a new tabletop role-playing game using BRP, the basic role-playing game engine, to them. And they will shortlist up to 10 people who will each get $500. Then of those 10 people, another three winners will win another $2,000. And finally, one single winner who will be a people's choice one, so I assume voted on by the public, will win a further $500. So in theory, any given person could win up to $3,000, and there's just over $10,000 in total being given out.
Which is nice.
I think what's really nice about this as well is they mentioned that the entrants retain ownership of their work and can publish the game themselves.
Yeah, so they don't want it.
Yeah.
They're just trying to...
So this is like, they're basically a way of them supporting and funding people that are making games using the system, which I think is nice.
It's to inspire and...
support third-party publishers.
Yeah. It's just to galvanise the third-party BRP, I guess, community a bit, because it's in their interest to have a supported game where lots of people are making games.
Yeah.
So they're not asking for ownership of the game. You keep ownership of the game, you can publish it yourself, do what you want with it. They're just going to encourage you to do it and pay you a bonus if it's cool.
Yeah.
Basically.
And that must be really great if you're planning on crowdfunding your own, because that would be some really great marketing as well. Because if in your crowdfunder platform of your choice, you could also put it won this design challenge, people would probably be like, oh, cool. Someone's actually looked at it and said, this is a good idea. So
Absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. I love seeing things like that. But the submission is for, closing date is the 31st of May, or May 31st, But it's not that long if you weren't already working on an idea, though, in fairness.
I suppose so, yeah.
So, and they're happy for it to be newcomers and anyone, so I think that's really great. I really like that piece of news.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
Yeah. Right, what other news have we got?
I have a piece of news about Adventures League.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good. So, pretty much, there have been some changes to Dungeons & Dragons Adventure League. The big bit of news is that they're moving over the site and information onto D&D Beyond, which isn't a huge surprise. So I think that was something they said they were planning on doing anyway. Mm. So there is now a tab on D&D Beyond, you'll see, which is Adventurers League tab. And so they're going to move their mic. I think the old site is still the Yawning Portal, you know, content and things like that will be transitioned there. So it's not all there yet, but it's slowly being moved over. And the idea is that they're trying to make it welcoming for more people, so they have a whole section on what is Adventurers League and things, so they're trying to make it more accessible and have it all there. And I think that makes sense, because I think a lot of new players don't know what Adventurers League is. I know a lot of players that play D&D for a long time don't engage with Adventurers League, some of it because it's not their thing, some of it because they don't know much about it. So this makes sense to me, but then again, I'm not somebody who, you know, engages with D&D Adventurers League, so I don't know if that's annoying for other people for any reason. But anyway, it's on D&D Beyond now, so you can check out stuff on that.
Yeah, but they're making D&D Beyond basically the place to go for D&D, aren't they?
Which makes sense, having it all in one place and making it easier to find stuff. And they've got information about how to become a premier organiser and things like that. So pretty much overall, they're trying to make it more visible and accessible throughout the organisation, which...
I mean, certainly one of the things which helped bounce me out of Adventurers League, which was designed as an on-ramp for new players before we must play, was just trying to keep up with the rules calls and the rules amendments.
Really?
Because, you had to be like in a Facebook group, Discord channel, and like just, if you want something to be official, print it in a PDF, put it on the website, and then this can come out every, collect it. I suppose I can try and keep up with it if it's like a monthly schedule, but no, I had players telling me that the moderators were saying, well, it said this in the Facebook group. I'm like, This is not rules as written D&D. This is basically hearsay. I'm just not that interested. I didn't want to run games which are based on hearsay.
Well, maybe this will kind of go towards alleviating that, though. They're trying to.
It looks like that's what they're trying to do.
Concentrate it in one place.
No. I mean, making it centralized point of contact, and maybe doing something about the neglect which it was treated with for several years would definitely help. Because there's a lot of lovely people in that community who put, I just like to say, immense amounts of work into it. Like, and certainly it's like, there's a lot of people who have bad experiences with it, but that's really a reflection, I feel, more of TTRPGs as a hobby sometimes. A lot of people say, a lot of people are also very sniffy and very rude about it, saying, I think you're playing with strangers.
I've always had like a conceptual difficulty in kind of understanding what its purpose is. And I get that's a me thing, because obviously it works perfectly fine for many, 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 many people. But I just don't quite understand what's the advantage in playing Adventurers League as opposed to just playing any other adventure. That's the bit I could never quite get my head around. And it might be just because I've never interacted with it and never... I experienced it myself, and if I did that once, I'd probably go, oh, obviously, that's why, but...
Well, acting has a source of information. Please do not take this as, like, an endorsement of Adventurers League, but the advantages should be that you can turn up at any table that is running Adventurers League, which could be literally anywhere. Like, had a guy at the club, he started playing in Canada, started playing with us. Great chap, love to see him. He started playing Adventurers League with us because he could take the same character and know that his magic items, his progress, could all be verified and checked, and he'd be able to play anywhere he likes in the world. I've had characters that I've taken to several conventions in various places in the world. I've played here as well, and that's been leveled up, and that's been really nice.
So you can keep your character from group to group, basically.
Yeah, and also, you know, consistency is a thing. The rules has written...
It's basically like it's one big game in a way because everyone's playing the same rules, it's the same world, it's the same universe. And I think that could be really fun because it's like being part of a big game, so you can chat to people about other people's games and stuff. So it's almost like being like
I can chat to people about their Curse of Strahd game now. I can do that with Adventurers. Now, that's the bit I don't get. What's the difference?
Well, because there's a
I'm
lot...
I'm not being awkward, I just don't...
There's a lot of these adventures, and it's sort of like... there's like, I don't know, like 10, 12 hardbacks or something like that with adventures that would be eligible for Adventurers League. So you can talk about that, and maybe some people played them, maybe some people in the middle are playing them. But with Adventurers League, there's a lot of like these little modules. They're also really good. Excellent value for me. They cost like $3 or something on DriveThruRPG.
I get the readily available and cheap aspect of it. That's certainly definitely an attractive proposition.
Value for money is how I would describe them, because I know what cheap RPGs look like, and this is not them, right? These are generally ones which give you a lot of content that always has social combat and exploration, and it's always got advice on balancing. So, like, in previous years...
So it's a badge of quality, then?
Like, in many ways, yes. I mean, not all of them, right, are absolute bangers because, it's everything. But enough of them are high quality. Enough of the ones I play are high quality that I would steal them, reuse them. And it says, like, 2 hours on the cover or 4 hours on the cover. I can tell you, like, if you focus on role-playing, that is 4 to 8 hours of role-playing. Easy. So, which is, excellent value for $3,
Fair enough.
A lot of good content. So, I mean, I like a lot of it. And you don't have to worry about the GM bringing in some, like, weird house rules, because people love house rules in D&D, which is fair. You know, but you don't have
everyone
to
has to be happy with it.
Well, it's like consistency. So like, you know, it's almost sort of like a franchise, I guess. You know, wherever you go, you'll be able to
only play the current one, or do they play old ones?
Oh, you can do what you like. Like there's I mean, as far as I'm aware, like we started off playing like the season one stuff, and it was on.
Yeah, I mean, no one's obviously going to stop you playing what you want, but you know,
it's still perfect.
Apart from Jess, who has a crusade and a campaign.
I do.
Jessica is the AP
people playing the wrong adventures.
I mean, but yeah, you could play like the latest series, and that, and sometimes they have season specific rules. Like when I started playing, we had the Death Curse from Chalk was in effect for all the season seven adventures. Which, you know, I didn't like so much. So we didn't play the Season 7 Adventures. And you can.
Fair enough.
But, it's tricky. But, I mean, there's a lot to like, but it, as I say, my issues with it just became increasingly hard to keep up with how it was supposed to be run. Like, you know, because you are supposed to run according to the rules. And the things like the character advancement, they kept fiddling with that. Because, as I have learned in subsequent years, the XP system is horribly busted. Horribly busted, so they can't give you like the XP you would actually earn from it. You've got like a minimum, maximum. So they've tried to move away from that to like do time on task, and then they're just
milestone level it or anything.
Yeah, I mean, basically they were sort of doing that for a while. I don't know what they're doing at the moment because I am several years out of date. But yeah, I've got fond memories of my time. It was a great way to meet new people, and I've had lots of fun doing it. So
terrible experiences. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you wanted to jump back in, D&D Beyond is the place to have a look at what's going on now. I have other news as well. About role-playing games as well, which is handy because that's what we... that was the brief. I understood the assignment. So, we know the Kobold Press, Tales of the Valiant, previously known as Project Black Flag. They are having a boxed starter set for the game, which makes sense. And they are teaming up with Steamforged Games as a partnership to create this. And
that is a very good idea when a D&D 5e variant has a box starter set. Brilliant idea.
Yes. indeed. But yeah, no, Steamforged Games is, they make a lot of board games for popular video games like Monster Hunter, Dark Souls stuff. And if we remember a couple of years ago, they did do the, they did like a bundled miniatures and adventures for 5e. They also did the 5e RPG for Dark Souls, which if we remember at the time had...
Problems.
I remember that.
It had problems at launch. I think it hadn't been properly...
Proofread.
So they printed it all, sent out, and everyone was like, this is beyond errata, it's an issue. And they had to reprint it all and send it out and do an apology, and it was a whole thing. So I imagine this starter box set will be the best proofread starter box set you will ever read in your life. Well, they said when the time it came out, they said they were going to update their policies and procedures to prevent that happening again. And I like to think that if people make a mistake, you do, and especially a very expensive one. They did everything you'd want them to do. They said, sorry, this is not right. We're going to reprint it. If you bought it to you, we'll send you a new one.
Cool.
What more can they do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, when's this planned for?
I don't know. They haven't told me.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to happen.
They're probably going to need to get like the main books out first.
Obviously it'll be after Kickstarter main books and all those sorts of things will happen, but it was an announcement for the partnership, so I guess they've just agreed to work together until they'll be starting work on it. I'm sure we'll get more news as it unfolds, and we'll keep you updated here.
Okay, there's a RPG coming from the Arkham Horror board game. I've never played the Arkham Horror board game.
I have. I like it.
Which one is Arkham
that's my
Horror?
Brief review.
Is that the eight-player one with, like, little portals?
Yeah, and you have all there's a card game version of it, which is very nice as well, and it's meant to be a living... You move on with the cards and the story evolves.
That one sounds really cool, actually.
It is really good.
The eight-player game, that Fantasy Flight, if I remember, man, they had a lot of tokens.
That one as well. I also like that one as well, but yeah.
You got a different one.
Yes.
So there's, like, Mansions of Madness, and there's another Arkham one.
There's a lot of Arkham Horror board games. There's a lot. But I like them.
Well, the RPG starter set's coming out at Gen Con.
Nice.
So, beginning of August.
Don't they have an RPG for that?
For Arkham Horror. Well, yeah, okay.
Well, it's the specific flavour of... Yeah.
So this is by Edge Studios, who are the RPG sister company to Fantasy Flight Games and who the Star Wars RPG moved over to when Fantasy Flight stopped doing RPGs.
Yeah.
So Edge Studio, and I think they're owned by both them and FFG are owned by Asmodee now, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a D6 dice pool system, apparently. There's going to be an initial adventure called Hungering Abyss, which is divided into 10 scenes, each playable in about an hour. So 10 hours of play, which is not bad going for a starter, I think. 48-page adventure book, GM reference board, 5 characters, 24 D6s, 3 poster maps, 16 NPC cards, 21 item and spellcraft. This is all very...
Boxes of lots stuff.
Very, very Fantasy Flight Games-y.
Yes.
Punch boards of tokens and puzzles, spell cards, item cards, various handouts, loads of stuff.
Still got stock in that cardboard factory.
Yes.
That sounds quite fun. It looks like a good box set. And it's $35 as well.
Yeah.
Which isn't the... Which feels quite accessible for a starter box set with all that stuff in, so...
I'll be intrigued to see what that's like when that comes out.
Yeah, I'll probably take a look at that. I do love a good starter box set.
I like a good starter set as well.
I've got so many I need to play through, so I've got...
Yeah.
I've got 3 on my stack to run and play through with people.
Well, you're going to be demoing one next week, Jess.
It's the Level Up Advanced 5th Edition one, because I ran that last weekend for my friends as like a test run, because I wasn't sure, because I'm doing one of the adventures that's like an exploration-y one, and it's, because it's exploration-y, there's loads of different points that you could interact with or not. So I was like, great for a one shot, because if they're going through it quickly, throw more of these encounters at them. If they're spending forever, do less. And my group I play test with, my friends, spent forever in this river. Like, oh my gosh, it was meant to be a quick encounter.
What was that, the hammer incident?
Yeah, so basically... In case you're going to play the adventure, I won't tell you the exact details, but there's a river, things happened in it, and the encounter was pretty much done. During said encounter, the rogue lost their hammer into the river because they used it as like a throwing weapon. Right. And everyone's like, we need to get this hammer. And the rogue goes, oh, no, don't worry about it. It's not an important hammer. I can also craft one as part of the journeying activities for free. So it's fine. Don't worry about it. Everyone else decided no. Our life's mission is now to retrieve this generic hammer from the bottom of this river. And we spent another hour just trying to fish a hammer out of a river.
It's like the whole door thing, isn't it?
And but sometimes that's what players want to do.
Like a couple of constitution rolls for exhaustion.
And I was very clear. It's cold. Like, you can't see the hammer anymore. Yeah. That's what they chose to do. So I think I had a real experience of running an adventure where the players
that is like... peak 5th edition.
Yeah.
I've got to say.
Yes.
Like, it's like, I mean, at least they didn't try and have sex with any of the fish.
There were no fish.
I'm aware
there.
Of at this time. That's a good call. Keep up that energy.
And the reason they did that is because we did have lines and veils before the session started and things. So that, you know, we had those those boundaries crossed.
Good.
And anyway,
did hammers feature in these?
I didn't think to put that in. I was like, as a veil, any fishing for hammers will now just be behind a veil, and we'll just resolve it that way. Which I may
lesson
have to
learned
do
for next time. Yeah.
But if you are going to Aircon in the UK,
in Harrogate,
three of us will be there running games. Yeah, so you can come along and play games with us.
Aye, lad, in West Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're sponsoring the RPG section, so we'll be there all weekend. And our games are free to book on and play. So other games that are being run, there's like it's a small amount, it's not a lot. There's a small booking fee for it and things. But ours are free.
Free!
So if you don't like it, we'll give you 100% refund.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, moving box on. Set for Tales of the Valiant and Arkham Horror are coming out at some point.
Yeah.
Arkham Horror will be August, Tales of the Valiant in the future.
Is there more news, or are we done with the news?
I quite liked one of Mike Shea's latest video logs. I put a link in the show notes. It is a nearly 13-minute exposition, but he's talking about using paper character sheets and the various pros and cons thereof.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was like really, really well put together. Like, obviously, you can't lose your paper sheet due to a poor internet connection.
Mm-hmm. I can lose it lots of other ways, Lisa.
I believe in you. You can do that.
I know.
We have dogs. Jessica and I both have dogs.
I have a very different dog to your dogs, though.
That is true.
But Peter, you were saying, sorry.
There's a lot of advantages to having dogs. There's no advantages to having dogs. But there's a lot of different advantages. Oh, come on. I listen to you too. I'm sure there's advantages as well. Anyway, there's a lot of advantages to having paper character sheets, not least things like customizability. For instance, players in my games have rewritten their character sheets to be pretty much how they want them to be. I'm like,
yeah,
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. It's like it actually does make me happy. People are like, yeah, we'll just do this, and this is the way we do it. I feel it gives you like more independence and agency about the creation of your sheets. And also, like, I know for a fact that on a paper sheet there will be no ads, there will be no pop-ups, there will be no microtransactions. You do not have to worry about any of those.
Just wait for that dystopian future where even the paper has pop-up ads.
So your lens glasses that are installed into your retinas.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, no. So, yeah, as I say, he talks about why you should use them, top tips for using them, writing down page numbers, you know, because indexing is big and clever, using index cards, sheet protectors with dry erase markers, packing tape for dry erasable zones. We're looking at you, hit points, and any other thing which changes on the frequent. So that is a tip I'm definitely stealing.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's Life Flourish, what can I say?
Yeah.
And loses gaming. So, yeah.
He does.
It's a great video. So I don't normally shout out videos. I'm normally the sort of person who says, oh, I clicked for the link. Oh, it's a video. Oh, back. But no, in this case, I was like, oh, actually, yeah, I'll watch this. This is good. This is sufficiently interesting to overcome my dread for the first.
Well, it's who you know it's by. You know it's going to be a decent video anyway, and it's not going to be some clickbaity horrible.
That does help, but like I say, it's a high bar to get me to watch a video. Unless we're talking drama, in which case I'm all about it.
All about the drama.
Amen.
So, I do another piece of news. So, as we all know, I love a bit of Baldur's Gate 3. That's what I'm doing with my evening this evening, because my usual RPG session was cancelled. So I was like, great, I'm going to sit and play Baldur's Gate 3 all evening. Anyway, we previously talked about Pathfinder Gallowspire Survivors.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the RPG from Paizo, based obviously Pathfinder by BKOM Studios, and we have a release date for it now, because we previously have had information teasers, but the release date will be 4th of April, so that's very soon, just less than a month away. So it's got loads of features that the community are requesting from it. It's got loads of new UI improvements, you know, gameplay balancing, Steam Deck compatibility. But yeah, so you know, you can also play local co-op and Steam Remote Play. So they've uploaded it and made loads of different changes to it from like the beta early preview version, and it's officially going to be out on April 4th. So
cool.
You like an RPG video game as well to supplement your gaming, this might be worth a look.
Nice. Yeah,
it's on Steam in early access right now. There's a demo you can play currently.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I might take a look at that.
Yeah, what was that called again?
Pathfinder Gallowspire Survivors.
You'd have to tear yourself away from it's like cheating on Baldur's Gate 3.
It's not.
By playing
I don't have a monogamous relationship with Baldur's Gate 3.
With video games.
Baldur's Gate 3 is very chill about that, much like many of the companions in Baldur's Gate 3.
We can share.
Don't we start talking about it. But yeah, no, I thought my addiction to Baldur's Gate 3 was starting to wane. And then I was saying this to my partner because we work in the same office just yesterday. And then he commented that we were listening to the Baldur's Gate 3 soundtrack as background in our office while we were working. And I was like, you know what? That's really fair. Banging soundtrack. But anyway, Pathfinder Gallowspire Survivors. But yeah.
Yeah, I might have a look at that. It looks like it's about six of your English pounds. So that's always nice. About, I don't know, $8-$10 American.
That's not bad. Yeah. Now, we have mentioned before the Transformers in G.I. Joe RPG beginner boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. It's just that we've got a date for them. They're coming out in May, and they're going to be $35, and we know what's in them now.
Cool. Mm. Lots of stuff.
So these are from Renegade Game Studios for those Hasbro-licensed RPGs. And what we got, a 32-page rulebook, two 26-page adventures, okay. 8 pre-generated characters, a set of dice, and a GM screen for $35.
Nice. Can't argue that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got a bit of Kickstarter news for the indie scene, if you're interested.
Okay.
Yeah, it's doing quite well at the moment. Fae Earth. I've put a link into the chat. It's from Brambleheart Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's got very strong Carnival Row energy, I would say. So,
okay.
So, like, not quite that universe, but fans of that show would recognise that there is a 19th century, so we've got industrialisation going on, and you've got fae creatures meeting, like, you know, the growth of the industrialisation, made by an Irish fella, over from Dublin in Ireland. And, yeah, you have things from the Brothers Grimm running into, like, you know, steam engines and so forth.
Nice. Hmm.
There's, like, huge amounts of, like, combinations of artificery and, what they say, magitech. So, yeah, lots of, looks like quite an interesting game. There's a fair few videos on YouTube, if that's your thing. Mixing of different fae, bit of, lots of magic kicking around, lots of technology, but on sort of that sort of Victorian level. And yeah, it looks like it's pretty artistically done. It's got quite a high goal, I would say, something like €10,000, which is, around about $10,000 or £8,000. But fair play to them. It's been on for 3 days and they've hit something like 2,700. So, yeah.
Nice.
Got a bit of a mission, but it looks kind of cool. What can I say?
Excellent. Hmm. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Right. I think we're probably done with the news now.
I am.
I am. We all are. Okay. Nice.
Okay, so today we're playing a science fiction RPG.
Awesome! I have my engineer character ready.
And I have my medic. You know, I love slaying dragons and everything, but some space lasers would just make for a fun change, I think.
Okay, so this game is based on real science.
Cool. We can play and learn at the same time.
Well, as long as you don't expect me to know anything about brain surgery.
Or me about rocket science.
No. We're not too much, anyway. But, you know, so, you're fleeing the spaceport, which has been overrun by Martian soldiers.
Right, to the ship! How far away is it?
Your ship is on the landing pad, so it's not far away from you.
Oh, great. We hot-foot it to the ship and start the engines.
Okay, how much fuel does your ship currently have?
Oh, let me check the character sheet. Yes, 30.
So, 30 what?
30 fuels?
No. Remember, this game is based on science, so, you know, fuel is recorded in kilograms.
So, 30 kilograms of fuel?
No, it's 30,000 kilograms of fuel.
Ooh, that's a lot of fuel.
Right. And so how much fuel do you need to take off?
To take off?
Yeah, your character sheet should have that figure. It's right there, see?
400.
400?
Of course. 400,000 kilograms of fuel.
Now that's a lot of fuel.
Yes it is. That's 400 tons of fuel.
400 tons? Just to take off?
It's science, remember?
Look, I know you said this game would be more realistic, but don't you think this is a bit, you know, too realistic?
Nobody said spaceflight was easy.
Fine. We can't afford to take off. Is there another ship nearby? One with fuel in it?
In fact, there is. A nearby ship is fueled and ready for its first mission.
Well, great. Well, we'll just steal that one.
Okay, so you're on the new ship. Now, if you'll just do your launch calculations.
What now? Can't I just press a button?
it doesn't work like that, my friend. So space travel is highly complex and a mathematical process.
Well, is that just like a skill roll then?
So make an engineering skill check.
16? Is that enough?
Well, I guess you'll find out. Are you ready?
Already.
Ready.
Beginning countdown, T-3 hours.
What?
Yeah, so this is like the quick version, obviously.
The spaceport is overrun by Martians. We don't have 3 hours to wait.
Yeah, but you can't just break the laws of physics because you're in a hurry.
Well, look, I'm really not sure about this realistic style of play. Can we do it a bit more like a Star Wars?
Yeah, but that's not really scientific, is it? I mean, that's more like space fantasy.
But it does have the advantage of being, you know,
fun.
You don't think science is fun?
I don't think real-life space travel makes for an exciting tabletop gaming experience, if that's what you mean.
Oh, fine. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll let you skip the countdown. Oh, I mean, but you know, you have no idea how many rules you're breaking here.
Screw the rules, let's launch!
Okay, so the rocket blasts into space.
Let's point the ship towards Altair 14 and get the hell out of here.
Okay, you'll need to plot your course.
Of course we will.
Okay, so you're currently orbiting Altair 4, and Altair 14 is nearly 3 billion miles, which will take you,
Another 3 hours? You have got to be kidding.
No, not hours.
3 days?
What are you trying to say? It's longer than 3 days just to get to another planet in the same pesky solar system?
Yes, I mean, it's more like 3 years.
3 years?
You have got to be kidding me.
Well, look, that's just how space travel works.
Well, what about faster than light?
Yeah, you know, FTL, warp speed.
Hyperdrive.
There's no such thing as warp speed or hyperdrive.
And how does anybody get anywhere?
Well, slowly.
No, is there not like a stargate or a wormhole or something?
Oh, anything to bring this fast to a quick end.
Hey, that's a bit unfair. I mean, I didn't write the laws of physics, you know.
You're the bleeding GM. You can write whatever laws of physics you blinking well want.
Yeah, the magicians at the seaside aren't exactly forcing your hand, you know.
So let's ixnay on the ixnay and give us a frigging wormhole.
Fine. So you want a wormhole. I suppose you don't want to hear about wormhole stability and, you know, quantum field fluctuations then.
We do not.
Oh, okay, fine. So you make it to Altair 14. Unfortunately, there's an asteroid field.
Finally, some fun. I make a piloting check. Ooh, 9.
Ooh, ouch! Not enough. So you graze an asteroid and are flung from your chair to strike your head in a nearby console.
Why don't these things ever have seatbelts?
Engineer, you are unconscious.
Oh, just my luck. Oh, medic, can you heal me?
Let me check.
Okay, so the engineer has suffered trauma to the cranial region. You will need to perform an emergency operation.
Wow, you're actually going to do brain surgery?
Well, it's not exactly rocket science, is it?
Malak the Maleficent here. If, like me, you're enjoying this podcast, please consider subscribing on Patreon for exclusive bonus content every week and the warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing you are helping to keep the show going. Subscribe at patreon.com/Morris. There, I said it. Can you stop staring at me like that now? The things I do. All right. Don't forget, patreon.com/Morris. Can I go now?
As mentioned, next week we are going to AirCon and we're all going to be running one-shot games for people using like Level Up and What's On New and various things. And I'm baby GM, as we've discussed, because I started last year, so I'm still quite new to it. Mm. I've only run one game which wasn't for friends and people I knew, and everything went fine. I've run this adventure in advance to kind of test it, to check it out and things. I've done a lot of prep, but one thing I'm worried about is things going wrong in the one-shot, people not having a good time. And what I do to try and course correct for those issues. Because that I feel like I don't have a lot of experience on. And I feel the more you run games, the more you encounter it, the more strategies you have to deal with it. So I was going to ask the two of you, who've been running games for a wee while. I was going to lean on your combined experience to talk about how you get things back on track when things go wrong during a session.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two facets to it.
Okay.
Two approaches to it. Mm-hmm. So one is the game itself, things going wrong in a sort of plot mechanical sense.
Yes.
Like a TPK or written into a corner in the narrative of the game or something like that. Or the players have gone and killed a really important NPC that you really, really need or something like that. So an in-game kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's things going wrong from a more sort of at the game table kind of thing where things aren't jutting or working at the game table for some reason.
Vibes are
maybe
bad.
So there's two different things that can happen there. And I guess they've got two different solutions.
Well, should we tackle the first one first? Because the second one sounds a bit more social. And the first one is probably where I lack more experience, because I have spoken to human beings throughout my life a few times. So I feel the second one, maybe I'm a bit more confident on. The first one you mentioned, things mechanically going wrong in the scenario. Let's talk, if we could talk about that first, I'd appreciate that.
Okay. So there's a bunch of different things that can be done. I mean, you can go drastic and you can actually rewind, which I have That's done popular. Before when things have gone so cataclysmically wrong. And I've gone, look, sorry, guys, it's can we just rewind to half an hour ago? Because this is... And I've very rarely done that. And I don't think it's an ideal solution at all. But at the worst, with the buy-in of your table, that is a solution. You can do that.
What sort of scenarios would you go to that
A TPK. A TPK.
I mean, these things are obviously better prevented.
Yes.
Then, like, because, like, I mean, if we focus on TPKs, I mean, Russ, has that ever happened? Well, it sounds like it has happened. What can you give us a bit of a case study about, you know, what led to this TPK? Is that
I'm trying to remember a specific. I know it has happened more than once to me, but I can't honestly, off the top of my head, I can't actually remember a specific details of one. It's definitely happened.
I mean, I can remember what's happened to me as a player. It was in a campaign, though, which I think is different. So we all died. And the GM ended the session. They said, okay, this has happened. I think I can find a solution to it between now and our next session, so leave it with me. But because it was a campaign, we had the flexibility and a solution was found. But my fear is, because I'm doing a one-shot, I want this to be a satisfying experience and story contained. Yeah. And so, obviously, a TPK during that is...
You can't pause
and go, well, we'll end the session early a bit this week and pick up next week. You know?
Can just slip into an afterlife adventure and then... You can do all sorts of different things.
For a campaign, I'd feel more prepared to deal with, like, everyone dying. But in a one-shot, how do I get it back so we're having a satisfying story in the 3 or 4 hours that we have?
Like for me, like, I think I'd actually be more okay with a TPK at a convention. Because it's all about respecting player choices. Now, like, it's not a desired outcome.
Yeah.
But and
certainly you wouldn't want it too early in the session either. Yeah, like if people have signed up for a 4 hour gap.
Like if things, like, it's all about the communication. If things have gone so badly wrong in the first couple of minutes that you're in, like, TPK situation, like...
Well, then you just pretend it's deliberate and it's like a cold open and they go, and these are your real characters.
If it's
early enough.
I mean, I mean, it's getting on 25 years ago. I read this article. It said the TPKs happen when people are looking at their character sheets and not talking to each other. So one of the things I always do to avoid a TPK is go around the table twice, like asking people for a physical description, and then I go around a second time asking how people know each other. I find bribing players with metacurrency is very useful for that. Russ, no, you're not a fan. Perfectly okay. But it's like that going round, and that way everyone's got two mates. And that breaks the ice, and also it means people are, like, you know, communicating with each other. So warning signs that you've got a TPK on the way are things are going badly and the players are shutting down. And, like, it's all heads down. It's very obvious. It's like in an in-person game, like, it's all heads down. People are looking at things. You're not getting cool descriptions. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting, like, you know, more terse stuff. People are, like, worried and they're not communicating anymore.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a game going wrong. I don't know if it's necessarily a sign that a TPK's on its way.
It could be, though. I see how it could.
Like, I'm not saying every time this happens, I get a TPK, because I'm quite focused on doing what I can to help a party avoid a TPK. Because, like, yeah, there's such an information asymmetry in play. They might not know what's going on. Sometimes they need a map. And you know, it's like, yeah, with players doing things like, they're doing things which to you, they're like, that's really stupid. Are you just deliberately jumping to your death? Not always the case, but often, like,
you know, Leroy Jenkins sits down at the table and just, you know, does their thing.
I mean, I'm hearing, like, last week about some guy who's like, yeah, there's a pit of infinite zombies. I'm a jump in it. And that's the way to end the game. I was like, you have to respect that agency, but it's been very clear, like, you know, about what's going to happen. And for a lot, for certain older school GMs, Like, nah, that sounds like a player facing problem to me. And, you know, that is a style of play. But for a convention, maybe people are coming in with different assumptions.
Yeah.
I think what's great is when a GM is able to hit that magic spot where the PCs are actually afraid enough that they think a TPK is a possibility, but the GM has it under control so that they can conjure that feeling of fear, and yet the PCs come out victorious, and then they get the double whammy of getting that, wow, we did it, kind of victory feeling at the end.
Mm.
Yeah,
but that's a line. There's a line to tread.
That is something I'm very, very interested in, because for me, that is like some top tier, like, you know, excitement in a game.
You have to know the system really well for that, because you get a bit of...
I'm not 100% sure about that, to be fair. Like, it depends on how much support your system gives you.
Well, you got to know what the numbers you're using mean so that you don't accidentally, like, go too easy or too hard and pitch the challenge right, is what I meant by that.
Oh.
You could be able to eyeball that quite well.
I mean, certainly running, like, 5th edition, there is a lot of, like, you know, brown trouser moments and, like, sweat and just, like, can I keep calm, can I keep calm? They've probably got this. And you're, like, your head is just a whir of, like, thinking, okay, I'm pushing it, but do I need to back off? Because if you back off too early, or it's too obvious in some fashion, that will disappoint players. Like, I would be disappointed. I play.
Also, it's about reading the room, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Understanding how your players appear to be feeling.
Yeah.
And trying to maintain that balance to keep them feeling that way.
And that's another difficulty I'm worried about with, because running with my friends, I know my friends quite well. So I have a good sense of those things from them. But when I'm running for people I've not played with before, that's always much more difficult to gauge. I find it that way anyway.
I mean, absolutely valid. Like I say, I mean, part of it's going to be your own individual confidence. In the same right, like, if you're driving or something, you come up to a curve.
Giving me a driving analogy? No, I haven't passed my test. You know, I failed my test 3 times.
because you were recording a podcast at the same time.
Or live streaming. I don't know.
I'm going to fail just like my test.
Okay.
Sorry, Peter. You can go on with that analogy if you like.
I guess because it's like things like driving a go-kart or something that sometimes gives you that same sort of feel. Of like where you're coming up to a corner and you're like, you know, how much turn, where do you feel comfortable and pushing that comfortable zone? And it's like just gauging that. Some of that will come with experience.
How much of a thrill seeker are you as well? How close to the edge do you want to skirt?
As close as I can possibly manage it.
But the kind of question is, how do you recover from when it has gone wrong, as opposed to how do you present it going wrong?
Yeah.
So assuming you've done all that,
dice have turned it's gone wrong.
It's gone wrong. So you've TPK'd.
Yeah.
What do you do now? Yeah.
Like, well, you're mid.
And this is
there's a bunch of steps leading up to it. Like, you know, you've got mid TPK, players can't hit nothing. Like, and like every time you roll the dice, it's like, that's a double 20s on a disadvantage. Or if you're playing Savage Worlds, hit with a raise. And and a raise. A double raise. Okay. Can you make a psych roll? That happens. And things like in May games, the action economy is a thing. Like, you know, if there is a lot more monsters than there are players, then that's a problem. Yeah. So things you can do to avoid it. Because, like I say,
prevention. Still talking about the stuff to avoid the thing going wrong.
Yeah, because that's important.
Talking about how to recover when it has gone wrong.
Well, 90% of recovering is seeing that it is coming and doing something to avoid it.
All right.
Right? Okay. Prevention is better than cure.
We'll talk about prevention rather than recovery.
Yeah, well, we've got to talk about the various things you can do to prevent it, because, like, it's a process. Yeah. You're harm reducing, It's like a variety of things that you've got places to fall back to, because waiting for things to go wrong and then fixing it afterwards is much harder.
Well, I have a few ideas about prevention, because that's something I think about with encounters. Like, one of the, like you say, sometimes I know some people are very against this, but you know what? If they just can't hit the thing and they're all going to die soon and the thing's got 20 hit points left, maybe it only has 5 hit points left now, actually, because You know, if I can do it so it'll be a satisfying battle and they just win, they're nearing death, but they just kill the thing, that's going to be a satisfying end. So I wouldn't mind changing the hit points of said monster, as long as it wasn't a key, like, end boss battle or something, if it's just the encounters they're having in the world. So that's one prevention thing as well. Another thing that works for some scenarios, and maybe this one...
If I may interject. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah?
Another thing you could do in that situation, if you're feeling particularly evil, is it could just laugh at them and then escape.
This is just what I was going to say, yeah.
Oh, in some scenarios...
Because there is a big bad kind of controlling things a bit in this situation, and things being recalled because there's other things in motion.
Mm-hmm.
But also that, and that can be nice because that can set it up for the boss fight, that these things that you're fighting, we encountered them last time and it didn't go well. What are we going to do this time?
Mm-hmm.
So that is another thing I have. So there's a few things about prevention, and also really nicely in the scenario I'm running, it has some advice on how to adjust things for different fights. So it's kind of got that written in, which is very nice. But
good support.
So prevention side of it, I feel a bit more about preventing a TPK. I'm like, okay, I've got some tools and things I can do.
Okay.
But like, I'm going back to the second part of it, because prevention, as you say, better than cure. But I've tried all these things. It's happened. Everyone is dead. What do I do? Yeah. In the game, just be clear, anyone jumping in now, being like, wow, what's Jess doing in her free time?
Yeah, yeah. The characters have all suffered adverse mortality.
Not the players. Not the players. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I find that, you know, when you're in that situation, it's perfectly okay to say things like, this has been a bit unexpected. What we're going to do is we're going to take a 10-minute break, pop to the loo, grab a cup of tea or something. I am going to have a think about how to proceed from this. See you back in 10 minutes.
Okay. It's the immediate thing to do,
Yeah, and that's open, honest communication. It acknowledges that the situation isn't as planned. Which, again, is not ideal, because for a lot of people, the joy of role-playing games is, like, you know, the expression of agency and the expression that you're playing to find out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're just generally unsure, I don't know how to do this, this is not part of my plan, you like to say, you know what, I'm sorry, I don't have anything planned for this eventuality, it was very unexpected, but I'll come up with something in the next 10 minutes. And then everyone has a breather, and you have a breather. And as a GM, you've got lots of different options that are available to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe the players will be like, let's say, I had an extra couple of hit points. That shouldn't have happened because I could have done all these things. Because especially when you're at conventions, there's a lot of information on character sheets. I will climb briefly onto my soapbox and say, and user interfaces that they are sometimes not very well designed. And climb back off my soapbox. So, you know, there might be something like, oh, I had a healing potion. I should have used that. And it's like, okay, well, maybe you can retcon it a little bit. Not like a full retcon, like you were saying, Russ, earlier, but like a little tiny bit of one. So that's a thing they could do. So it's like, okay. Or enemies leave you for dead, or they get taken prisoner, and then they wake up in a jail cell, and then they have to do an exciting jailbreak. Options. Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Russ?
Yeah.
I think various options.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming a TPK has happened.
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
So one is the whole afterlife adventure thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The other is alternate characters. Depending, if it's a one-shot, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And depending where the TPK took place.
Because that was one of my thoughts, is that the new party would find the old party's bodies with all the clues and bits of stuff.
Yeah, for example, you can have that happen. Uh-huh. Another one could be a sort of like dream sequence where they speak to their gods and their gods say, "Your destiny is not over yet. I'm returning you to this world."
Mm-hmm.
To continue. It's a bit of a fudge and a bit of a clumsy one, but it can be done.
Yeah.
There's rewind, obviously.
Because that was my first instinct was, can I do it as this was a vision of the future that your party's had and you've been, and then the players go back and they're like, this is what would happen if you do that. What do you do now?
You could do that.
Which it feels a little like the ending of short story, sequence. And I woke up and it was all a dream.
You won't get this reference at all, but it's Bobby Ewing in the shower.
Yeah.
I don't know that man or his shower. You're correct. I don't know the reference.
So in Dallas, that famous amazing television series.
Oh my goodness.
They brought back a character called Bobby Ewing after a few years. And with no explanation whatsoever, I think it was his girlfriend or wife discovered him in the shower after he'd been actually dead for 2 years or something. And they just carried on like nothing had happened and explained it off like the last 2 years had been a dream.
Okay.
Yeah.
It feels unsatisfying.
I thought it was like,
I can't remember how long it was.
I thought it was like a season or something.
I don't know, maybe. I don't know.
Enough time that it was weird.
But it's just like, it's just there in the shower. And they're just like, it's like, okay, fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be the one I might tend to lean on if it's gone really badly and there's enough time. Or the, you get new characters and you will come across this adventuring party and therefore the new characters will have clues about how to not, in, you know, encounter that encounter again. So you'll be like, I see these people were killed by Monster Z and clearly they didn't, I don't know.
But, they were killed by Green Dragon Breath. We should have bought the antidote, not the fire protection. That sort of thing.
Yeah, for example. But yeah, so that's... Okay, all right. So there's some options to TBK there. My biggest fear isn't everybody dying, oddly enough. It is people catching the threads of what they're meant to be doing. Because I, as a player, have been in a scenario once where I really wasn't sure what we're meant to be doing and it feels really frustrating and it wasn't a good experience. Right. And again, coming back to Peter's point, prevention is better than cure. So I've got lots of ways for players to get information and I've got lots of ways to throw things at them. And so, you know, if they're not getting it, you just throw more, you know, and the adventure is designed that way as well. And I even have an idea for a really obvious signpost if it's getting to the last hour and they're not there, that's like, it's here. I've got one of those in the story planned that I did need to use in my test run that worked because they just spent ages messing around in a river. But even if with all those things I've done to prevent it happening, what if they're just not going that way? What do I do?
Just have an NPC turn up and literally tell them what they need to do.
I mean, that is valid. Okay, so again, from a prevention and harm reduction model, first off, do not gate clues behind skill checks.
No.
Good stuff. Like, give extra context. And like, you know, huge amounts of context,
If there's a clue, they should always find the clue.
Well, level up does this really well.
Otherwise, why is the clue?
Because it's like with exploration challenges, it's how well you do is how much information you get, and there's a scale. So it already has that in the adventure, which is really nice.
Crit success, maybe a crit.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll always get something. So there's always that. But yes.
Yeah. And have we talked about quantum ogres before?
Yes. I'm aware of it, but for the sake of the podcast, shall we?
Okay. So just in case you're like, quantum ogre, what's this? Is this like the secret quantum leap?
Whatever choice they make is going to take them to the right place.
Or the wrong place,
as the case may be.
To a certain extent, like, there's a path in the road. One has like ogre sign and one does not. And you go down one that does not, and yet you end up fighting the ogre anyway. That is as railroady. That's not respecting player agency. However, quantum clues, so it's like, you know, they're looking for something, and it's like, oh, just look in the right place, please, I'm begging. But they're like, they're just ignoring it or whatever, so they accidentally come across it somewhere else. They're like, these clues sort of shift to where they need to be to get the story.
I think another thing you can do, and this is something I've been aware of, is that players' attention can drift a little during, especially during a 4-hour session or something, because it's a long period of time to sit there concentrating. I struggle with that, you know, for 4 hours. It's hard. And they might miss stuff that you said. Maybe some of the players know and some of them don't. You might find that one or two of the players are sitting there and they're not entirely sure why they're in this conversation at the moment, why they're talking to this noble, or what this information is they're supposed to be getting. Because they just missed a bit, because they drifted out for 5 minutes, like half an hour ago. So repeating stuff is always a good thing to do. Just reminding people of stuff. Don't think just because I mentioned it 2 hours ago, they know it. Because they might have missed it.
One thing I tend to do...
Again, the use of a break.
Yeah, I'd say one thing I tend to do if I need to get really important information out is pointedly tell one person, because then everyone else is more interested. So it can be when the other players are having an RP conversation, I want this nose thing, I turn to another player and say, you notice this thing happen. And then everyone goes, what? What's going on over there? So that's like a bit of a meta way to get that information out. Because if people aren't paying attention, because then I just... And also, I'm rewarding the person that is paying attention as well, because they get the thing. Obviously, they're going to share it with the other characters, because it's that sort of thing. But I do like doing that as well.
That is possibly one of the ground rules to mention when you're playing, which is you can say, I'm just going to assume that if I tell you some information, your character would probably tell the other people.
Well, I mean, it depends on the situation. Because sometimes, it's if buts and maybes.
Some players have a very "I'm not telling anyone anything" sort of attitude, which again is why I feel the need to stress it. A way you can get around that in prevention is if you're obviously not in the case of this one, but you can, when you're making a character sheet, you can put information in the character sheet, which some of which may be slightly false, others of which is super important. And it comes up naturally in play.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you say, oh, well, it's probably in the catacombs. And the person who sat there wondering, why do I have catacombs information? I know something about catacombs.
Well,
I mean, obviously, it doesn't always work. But
literally going on from that, important information, put it in prop format.
Yeah.
So they've literally got it on paper in front of them, whether it's a letter or a map or a handout or something like that. So it's not something they have to retain in their head. It's literally there on a prop.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, you know, whatever it is. And make sure, also, right from the start of the adventure, just make sure that everybody really is aware of what the goal of the adventure is.
Yeah.
And nobody's actually beginning it and hasn't paid attention and is going to spend the next 4 hours not entirely understanding what's going on.
I mean,
so make sure everybody does know
this that. One's quite obvious because it's like you're going to this place to find and retrieve this specific thing. So it's like, cool. It's like, you know, it's somewhere in this area. Where is it?
Mm.
So it's a very clear goal.
Yeah. And one of the things I like to do is occasionally a recap. And occasionally when they've been having a discussion, I sort of use sort of like a chairperson skills and say, okay, so as I understand it, you've narrowed it down to these options. And of course, these aren't the only options you have, but these are the ones I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll make it clear that's not you forcing them down a path, it's the path that they've suggested.
Mm-hmm.
And then that helps focus the discussion again, which is sort of a section two, like social problems, but it's a good skill to have to be able to moderate a bit, which I think you'll be quite good at.
Two things that can go wrong. One is TBK.
Yeah.
Mm. One is players not knowing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
A third thing that can go wrong is when the players take an action which completely derails the plot. So the classic example of that is they kill an important NPC, but it could be anything. Mm. What do you do to recover from that?
Well,
they've just done something unexpected. Like,
I've got less experience in that because whilst it's a very well-worn plot trope that all NPCs are actually secretly out to get you, I got to say, if I want to train my players to be murder hobos, that's how I'd go about it. Every time they meet an NPC that's friendly to them or helps them out in any way, I'd have that NPC betray them because that will encourage them 100% to be like, we met another person. The first insight 10 check. People that betrayed us, right, that we met, they seem quite friendly as well. They all betrayed us. This 11th person, don't fancy their chances. Don't feel trusting about this person. Yeah?
Hmm.
I mean, I realise this is going to make me very unpopular. I don't really care. But I think that's a bit of a hack GM thing to do. And I am a hack. I'll put my hands up to it. And even I wouldn't stoop to that level of hacking. Don't have your NPC betray people at the start. I mean, if the players are supposed to be escorting, say, a prince or princess or some sort of noble or diplomat somewhere, and they shank them, then they failed the mission. Good job. Like, you have managed to stab someone that you should not have stabbed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, I'll press up a few. Are you absolutely sure that the person that you are escorting is the person you wish to attempt to kill right now? And if they say yes, then I have to say this probably isn't a game worth saving.
But you're in a convention,
a convention
environment, and you're an hour in, and you kind of have to because basically these people have signed up. Maybe they paid for this event, they've signed up, and you can't really just say, oh, good job, right, game's over after an hour. How do you recover from that?
If they've gone against me saying, like, basically, just to let you know, right, if you continue your attack, you will kill this person and this game will be over. If they say, oh, I'd like to attack him anyway, then I feel,
All right, so your answer is you don't recover from it, but assuming that...
But there's some sort of
miscommunication. The premise of this conversation is about recovering from things that have happened. So
I mean, that's a valid form of recovery. It's like you've saved everyone some time. You've respected their choices, because you've got to respect choices. But I guess what I was taking away was, like, people are doing this by accident. They've accidentally done something stupid.
Okay.
Yeah.
A classic one from computer games is you cannot sell plot critical items.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I've had that happen to me in older video games, older computer games, and I did not enjoy this experience. Yeah. So if you give them like a magic gem, then nobody can afford it. Or people look at it and say, I don't want none. I don't know, because it's hard to say without specifics, but so you can't sell or throw away plot critical items. Expect, like I say, one problems I have had is people get like a bag or something, and there's something inside it, and that is crucial to the next bit, right? And they don't share that information. They don't look in the bag. They're like, oh, I don't like the look of this bag. And then they conveniently chuck it over a river, yeah? Because they don't want to mess with whatever's in the bag, because for whatever reason, someone else has trained them that if you do that, you will have a terrible time and your agency won't be respected. So, yeah, like, I don't know, man. That's like seems like a bad plot thing that you put in. I can't.
I think it's true. Prevention is better than cure on those things. But if we get to a place where that's happened, I think I will come to.
We're kind of refusing to talk about the actual.
I'm not refusing to talk about it. I just don't know what else you can do about it. What? Because unless you completely invalidate their agency and say, oh, as you're about to throw it off the thing, it bursts out and there's whatever it is.
Okay, so for example, say you've accidentally killed an NPC that's important. Can you, for example, sub in another NPC with the same vital information?
How did you accidentally kill them?
I don't know, Peter. It doesn't matter.
Peter, okay.
doesn't matter.
We've all accidentally killed someone on this podcast. Yeah. Okay? Let's move on.
How do you recover from the situation when it's
My thought was going to be something that Peter said earlier about the quantum clues. Like, why is this thing that they've done so important? Is there another way I can get that information? That thing was meant to provide another way.
Yeah, yeah. So does this NPC provide motivation? Does it provide information? Yeah. Are they, you know, what is their actual function in the game, narratively?
Yeah.
And how can you do that in a different way? Yeah. That same thing, in a different way.
I mean, this adventure I'm doing, luckily, is an exploration and it's a big area and you get different clues in different ways. So it's quite easy to do that quantum clue thing. And most of the areas have leads into it because it's not intended that adventurers will necessarily go to all these places. So that's part of the adventure design, which is really nice. But nevertheless, I'm sure things can happen that totally derail it. My one fear is they want to go somewhere else that isn't in the adventure.
Yeah.
That they want to leave the area.
Dragonlance had a rule specifically about this in the Dragonlance modules, where plot critical NPCs, you couldn't kill them. But you could defeat them, but they would always fall off a cliff or something.
Mm.
They would always, you'd never see the body.
They'd all
Moriarty it, so they could come back again later.
They can't possibly have survived that.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Fair enough.
I mean, I guess with like, so say you've established that you've got a diplomat and that they've got like, I don't know, 10 hit points or whatever, and then you have done something, like you said, okay, everyone's got to make a dexterity saving throw, and for whatever reason, you roll in the open, and you can see that they would take damage, and then they would have massive damage and be insta-killed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that point, you've sort of made it a robbery.
There's a Ra's al Ghul version in Batman Begins, where Bruce Wayne thinks he's killed Ra's al Ghul.
Mm.
But that was never Ra's al Ghul in the first place. It was always Liam Neeson.
As
he finds out towards the end of the film, spoilers, I suppose, when Liam Neeson turns up in Gotham.
Yeah.
And says, it was actually me. I was Ra's al Ghul.
Mm, nice.
I mean, you could go with that.
Yeah. It was like, you fools, you fell for my cunning plan. I'm thinking in terms of like friendly NPCs that you've accidentally, that you as GM or potentially the players have accidentally friendly fired. And saying, like, because it happens sometimes. It's like, you know, someone's cast a fireball, it's been great, and then somebody, not always me, but somebody else maybe has pointed out that, oh, isn't that NPC within the fireball radius? And you're like, just make a dexterity saving throw. How much damage did you roll? Oh, you rolled more than twice their maximum hit points or something.
Hmm.
And now they're toast. But again, it's like there's a certain amount of obfuscation where you can. Like, because they're important. But if you can't, maybe they have like a handy little parchment explaining what their orders are. Maybe they've got a ring of soul storing upon their person, which was obscured with in his all magic aura or something that they didn't notice that was going on there. That's why I say when you've like had like a game break, rather than a TPK, a game breaking incident. Yeah. Your game no longer works because of the events that have just happened. That's why I say take a break, fall back, let everyone have a chill out, and then you have some time to go to the loo, have a drink, and let your take a breath. Like if you smoke, go and have a quick cigarette, and you will come up with something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It doesn't have to be a very good thing. And again, I recommend honesty.
Yeah.
Because you're like, sorry, this was just not expected to happen. Sorry. I mean, yeah. I must say, I do enjoy running modules because that always gives me the fallback of saying, oh, such a badly written module. Blame the designers. Yeah. They're not there. No one's complained about it. If you've written your own, you're in much, much bigger trouble. Yeah.
So the worst thing of all that can go wrong, of course, which I think Jess touched on at the beginning of the conversation, isn't a in-game narrative thing. It's just a
social.
The players are not enjoying this. Mm. Not necessarily you falling out with the players or there's anyone's doing anything wrong or anything. It's just for some reason, it's just not working. Yeah. Everyone's a bit bored. It's not working for some reason.
Oh,
now that is probably the hardest one to like recover from. What can you do then?
I've dealt with this several occasions. Sometimes I've even been that player, like because I like to try out new systems, and sometimes I come across a system, and it's like you think, sometimes it's not for me. I'm like, okay, listen to you, but sometimes this is not for me, and the vibe is not good, and I'm just like, this is not good, and that is very hard because you're like, oh, do I need to go or what should happen? I mean, you'd have players right. Who do not, right, enjoy any form of D&D. They are, like, very publicly against D&D.
Okay.
And they have come to a table where I'm running D&D. For reasons which escape me. I don't know. I think
I think that's ever happened to me. Ooh, that would be awkward, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you very clearly signposted what you're running.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what? I don't think there's much more that you can do at that point.
It was not.
Are they making it very clear that, like, verbally, that they dislike D&D while playing D&D?
Yes.
Hmm.
And, like, they're saying, oh, and it's just this weird mix of, oh, I want to be able to do all sorts of things. Like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, yeah, I will work with you to do it. And, like, I can't possibly do a thing about it. And, like, there are many things you could do about it. You could do this, that, or the other. It's like, here are some options that you have.
Yeah.
But, like, well, that's
a problem player, though. That's,
yes. Yes, it is.
One thing I tend to do, because when I run games, usually I don't do horror games, and I usually say to my players, if at any point you want to stop playing the game and go, you can. Mm. And I try, and I know some people might not feel able to do that, but I very much do that as a safety tool in terms of it's not. I also kind of want to have that for just if you're not enjoying it. But I don't know how confident people are actually doing that, because I know very often I say things and people are like, she's lying and just being polite and not saying that. I'm not, but these people won't know me, so they won't know I'm doing that. But one thing I'm sat there is if people really aren't enjoying the game, I would like them to be able to say, oh, thanks very much for running this. I've got a good sense of it, so I'm going to jump off, but thank you for your time. I would love for a player to do that, or maybe some way try and signpost at the beginning that you can do that, because we are just playing a game.
Yeah.
We're sitting and playing pretend, and we're doing it for fun. And if it's not fun for you, for whatever reason, I think you should be able to leave.
At conventions, it can be very difficult as well because people have hangovers, or they get a bit. It's not about you. It's not about the game. They literally had a bad text message or something.
Yeah.
Or they might be incredibly tired because conventions can be long days.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So there's all these things.
With overstimulation.
There've been times like late in the day at a convention, I've literally been struggling to keep my eyes open.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like really, really struggling, just like so tired. Yeah. But
so I'm gonna want to try and signpost this.
Players can be drunk as well.
That's true. Yeah.
That if they're drunk, that's gonna be annoying.
In the evenings at convention, that could be the case. There's
unless everybody's having fun and getting drunk together, then fine. But if you've got one drunk player turning up
I run games on Friday night, right? But I am expecting a sort of a beer and pretzels atmosphere.
Yeah,
I
sure.
Adjust my style.
I think if it's agreed, it's fine. Yeah.
So you have to think about the time slot you're putting it in. Like the tense, investigatory one can work well late at night, or it might not work late at night, because sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes it doesn't work because the atmosphere is awful, because you're in the middle of a hall and there's blazing sunlight, and creating any sort of atmosphere is hard. It happens, and you just do the best you can.
Yeah, one situation I'm thinking of how I would deal with a problem player, because like you've said, in terms of socially, like they're doing something socially at the table, like, for example, it could be they are very drunk and everyone else is not, and so it's off, or maybe, you know, something like that. That I feel a little bit more confident handling, because having run the board game cafe, we did a lot of group social games, and so dealing with people's social dynamics. So what I would think to do, and I'm checking in with you two to think this is correct, I would probably call a pause for the game for a 10-minute break and just say, let's go get a drink, do that. I'd probably then speak to that player while everyone else is not around to be like, hey, are you aware of this? And like make them be aware, hey, you're doing this might not be your intention, but this is how it's going down. I'm lucky, I think I have the white woman privilege of not being seen as aggressive when I do that, because I'm also 5 foot tall. So I appreciate for other people, they might not be able to have that conversation without it getting back.
But
I
think people might get defensive about
it. I'm very I can use my privilege of that, of not people not getting defensive of it. I'd like to give them the chance to do that. And if they do get upset, they can just go and be like, okay, well, maybe this isn't for you. And then when we come back from the break, I'll be like, so-and-so had to leave anyway. So so that would be my thoughts of how to kind of deal with that. Because generally, I think as a GM, it's my responsibility to manage any player behaviour that is negatively impact the other players. Because that's on me to do it. I'm not looking to the other players to do that. Because when you are running a game, you are an authority on the table and you have to use that social power.
And that is a separate skill to running... To actually running the mechanics of the game. Being basically the... not leader of that group of people,
moderator. But the, You're a game moderator.
But a social moderator, social moderator as well as a game moderator,
That I feel a little bit more comfy with, because I think I have transferable skills from other areas of my life to do that.
Yeah, I think you'd be really good at that. You've got like a lot of the sort of that sort of thing. That's what
I'm less nervous.
She tells me off at conventions all the time.
I do. Absolutely do.
Rightly so. That's keep him out of trouble. Yeah.
I will.
I mean, but sometimes you get a group where you're like, I do not see how these people can be brought together into a coherent group. Like I had one at one of the conventions I was really at. It was like some parents and their 14-year-old and some people from the Grognard area of the spectrum. But you know, it's like, you know, just making sure you're going around and talking to people. And one very common thing is there's one player who just talks over everyone else all the time. And sometimes you have to be like,
One of the most annoying players.
Can I show you how I do it? I go, okay, thank you, Peter. Yeah, I'll come back to you in a second. Russ, what were you going to say? That's how I deal with that situation. Not saying that you were in that example.
Russ is the player that tries to play other people's characters for them, like suggesting what they should do constantly and things like that. And it's like,
I do that exact same hand thing when they're doing that. I'm going, hang on a sec. Let them. I think they were just deciding what they wanted to do. And I think I'm lucky with some of my privilege. Some things I do, I get away with because it's not read as aggressive, because small little woman. But I can get away with a few of those tactics of being a little bit more forceful in situations because it's read in it's picked up in a different way. So if someone's listening to this thinking, I might try doing that, be aware of how others perceive you in case, because some people may take that as a, that may not de-escalate a situation for you.
A lot of smiling when you say that and managing your tone of voice is very important.
Yeah.
Because like I said, sometimes I say that, someone else is trying to play here. So I'll come back to you in a second. Do appreciate it. It's cool. Love the enthusiasm. You know, the old compliment sandwich sort of thing.
Although I've read a thing that the compliment sandwich thing no longer works because everybody knows about it and everybody spots it. And apparently it now just makes people feel like they're being managed.
The thing I do.
Because they're so aware of it.
The thing I do is praise people for behaviours they're not showing, because then they act into it. I mean, like,
That's shit.
Yeah.
Right. People meet your expectations.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I do
you've
that
got
a lot.
Low expectations, they all sink to meet them. You've got high expectations, often they're all right to meet them.
Yeah.
Isn't that like that sketch we did the other week where the chef was just being praised for a whole bunch of things they weren't doing?
I mean, similar, but you don't do it that way. You can just, like, if I had a player that was running other people's turns for them, I would, in a break or something, turn to them and be like, say, I love how, even though you clearly know the system more than others, you're giving people space to figuring it out and letting them play their turns. I'm really glad about that, because some players that know more end up trying to run it for others, and I'm really glad that you're doing that, so thank you.
Oh, like that person.
I was about to say, I'm going to be really suspicious next time Jess ever compliments me, but I don't think she's ever complimented me for anything.
Yeah, I don't think you had too much. But yeah.
So I'm safe.
Just use things, use the players that you've got on, and take advantage of their willingness to engage with the game.
Yeah.
Someone who knows rules really well, fantastic. Oh. They are now your reference, your rules.
I'm 100% pleased with that. Because I'm not the most knowledgeable person on the 5e rule place and Level Up 5e. Like, obviously, I've read through Adventure, I've read through the rule book, I've prepped, I've read through the character sheets. But there's going to be people at the table that know more about it than me, and I'm absolutely going to lean on them for that.
Well, I literally love being able to just ask a player how something works if I don't
know. I'm 100% going to do that. And I'm even going to say that, because part of this, because it's the Level Up 5e starter box and doing some, the whole purpose of it is to help you learn the rules as well. Yeah. And if you're new to it, don't worry, because I'm actually new to running it as well, so we're all learning together. So I'm very much going to have it that be the vibe. So I'm not going to be the fountain of all knowledge and information. Like, I know the adventure, I know, you know, the rules, but hey, you might know some extra. It's going to be like, actually, it works like this. And I'll say, great, let's do that then.
Yeah, which is pretty much a style I like to adopt with the whole rules as written. I mean, it's like writing. Like, if you know the rules of the language you're writing in, you can then break them more effectively than if you're just constantly breaking rules because you don't know what they are.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, one is, like, clever, it looks amazing.
One is a bad writer, one's a clever writer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, precisely. Yeah, so that's pretty good. Yeah.
Well, I feel pretty good about that. I feel a bit better now. I'll probably chat to you more because we're driving up together next week to go to the convention, so I might pick your brains a little bit more. But I feel...
I'm making a podcast at the same time.
Live stream. Come on.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Put a camera at the front of the car.
I'm down. I feel a bit better. So we'll see how it goes. I'll report back. Well, next week we'll still be at the convention when we're recording. So the week after, I'll report back in case I had to use any of these tools or skills. But hopefully I turn around and say, do you know what? Everyone was lovely. We all sat down, played a game, played pretend, and had a lovely time.
You know, 99% of the time, that will be the case.
Yeah. I hope so.
I've read a lot.
I think at conventions, people are generally on good behaviour at that sort of thing. Like, you only hear about the bad things because they're unusual, I think.
I mean, and you get, like, at these conventions, people are paid to be here. They love role-playing so much, they have paid their own good money to be in that room.
My games are free.
So you're not dealing with people who are...
Yeah, ours are free. We're the people that wouldn't pay.
No, they pay to get into Echo.
Oh, yeah, the events. Yeah, that's true.
They pay to get into events. So, there is a certain geekiness level that says, yes, I'm so invested, I'm going to give you money to be in the same room. And that is good, to be fair. So, like I say, most of the time, like if you were doing something in a library, sometimes that could be a different vibe.
Yeah.
Or if people are coming along for free, that can again be different. If they have very different fixed ideas of what role playing is.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Sorry.
That's a whole other thing. That's a whole other thing. Alright. I think we're wrapping up for the week. Let's get ready for convention.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Alright.
Apparently, I now have to read this to you. This is the official podcast of Morris's unofficial tabletop RPG news, which you can find at enworld.org. You can find show notes at morris.podbean.com or wherever you found the podcast. If you feel like they deserve it, you can support the show on Patreon. In return, you will receive exclusive bonus content. Just go to patreon.com/Morris. If you're interested in his babbling nonsense, you can follow at Morris on the Twitter. Send your emails to morrispodcast@gmail.com. Not all of your emails, just the ones you want us to see. That's it. I'm bored now. You can go away. Shoo, off you go. Goodbye. Get out of here.
We'll be there next week. And also, we're going to have to record the podcast at some point while we're there, which we'll have to logistically sort out.
Yeah.
As you
suggested the other day, why don't we do it in the car on the way up?
I was doing it as tongue in cheek, but I was like, road trip podcast.
This is why you failed your driving test, Jessica.
That's not the reason I failed my driving test.
I'm pretty sure Jessica wasn't doing the podcast during the driving test.
There are reasons I failed my driving test several
times.
That's
a live stream.
But that was not the reason.
Not because you were doing a podcast at the same time.
Do you know what? I think I'm really good at driving, but they weren't willing to discuss it. So anyway.